If you're thirsty for big business ideas and lessons learned from people who have started up or started over, you've come to the right place. We've got shots of inspiration mixed with a few ounces of advice, delivered straight up by movers and shakers in Saskatoon's business community. So pull up a chair. This round's on us. Welcome to Chamber on Tap.
T-Bone.
I have a feeling we're snacking today.
Oh, snacking for sure.
I saw the setup when I walked in here today, and it is off the hook. It's crazy, yeah.
Yeah, we'll leave it to the Prairie Grazer for the grazing table.
Who's here from Prairie Grazer? What are their names?
We have Megan and Christy.
Okay.
They're owners of the Prairie Grazer here in Saskatoon. They have an amazing story and lovely, lovely ladies.
Let's listen in.
I was actually traveling out, my parents live on Vancouver Island, so I was traveling with my family out on Vancouver Island, and I was in Tofino, and we heard rumors that there's this amazing charcuterie place in Tofino. We never got in to see it, so I actually have no idea what it is like, but I truly thought that this was something that might be really interesting for Saskatoon to have. So as I was sitting there, like the wheels are spinning, I'm thinking like I obviously can't do this alone because there's too much to starting a business on my own. So I came back and I was actually on a camping trip with Christy, and I said, I really think we should start this business. I have this business idea. So I pitched it to her, probably not in a very good way. Like I was like, we should put meat and cheese in a box. Kind of like Lunchables, but better. And
I'm sold, right?
Yeah. Literally, she sat there and didn't really say anything. So I was like, all right, well, that fell flat. I guess if I want to do this, I'm on my own. And then she said she wanted to do it. So I was like, this is crazy. So this is like, there's a few different parts of the story that we don't always tell, but I'll tell this part now. So that night, and actually Natasha was with us. Yeah, Natasha's who's here. So we sat around the campfire at this point with our friends and hashed out like a potential name. So the first thing we did was secure an Instagram handle, because that is exactly how you start a business. Like if you have no idea.
And what was the name of that?
It was at the Prairie Grazer. Now we would take probably the off, because marketing people have told us it's redundant and not necessary. But it's there. And we can't change it because who knows, we might lose our Instagram handle. And then we joke about this, but we went to bed and we were sleeping together. We're not married. But we were sleeping together in my trailer, and we were like, okay, this is what we're gonna do. So we're gonna get these boxes. And that's what we did all night. We talked about starting
this company.
I think
it's really interesting because I remember laying in that trailer bed with you, and the first thing we started brainstorming was like, well, what local companies can we use? We were like, Gravelberg. I've heard of them before.
Yeah.
Let's try their mustard. It's got to be good, right? Like, we hadn't tried it at that point.
No.
And we were just kind of racking our brain to say, like, what local companies do we have here in Saskatoon that we can really support? It was in the middle of a pandemic. It was 2020, summer of 2020. So it was a very challenging time for a lot of local businesses, especially in the food industry. And so we saw it as an opportunity to do this crazy idea that Megan had, but really put a community-minded spin on it and support local.
What makes this team an amazing team? Let's start with you, Christy.
I think it's the fact that Megan and I are both driven beyond our wildest dreams. Like, we are both totally on the same playing field when it comes to determination and drive and just wanting to do the best at everything we do, and so we can keep up with each other's energy in that sense.
Yeah.
And we pretty much always see eye to eye on everything.
Yeah.
And if we don't, we talk about it, we hash it out, and then usually I end up coming around and saying, okay, that's a good idea, Megan.
I'm the dreamer, right?
Yeah.
So like, I'm always the one that's like, you know what we should do today? We should do this. To which Christy's like, we already have 88 things to do today. And I'm like, but this one's really cool. And so then I have to wait, but then usually we figure out a way to make it happen. I think the other thing, though, is very early on in this business, And I think I said, I was just joking about this, but honestly, I probably said something really stupid at the NSBAs, because I think I said something about crying in a corner or something like that. But that was actually true. Like, when we first started this business, it was just the two of us. And we were at the local kitchen. If you have been down to the local kitchen, we were at the local kitchen, and it was just Christy and I until sometimes 2 and 3 in the morning.
So tell us what a day in the life was when you first started.
It was busy. Because we had actually no idea how this was going to all transpire.
This was 2020.
Yeah.
Right? So this is the heat of COVID, right?
So we essentially started the business by dropping off 5 boxes. We made 5 boxes. We dropped them off with 5 people that we knew would be really honest with us. And all of them said, this is awesome. To which we were like, what do we do next, right? So there were some challenges with that, because being 2020, there were no supports for anybody. Like, no one was meeting with us in person. Like, if there were business supports, they were like, well, just, we'll do a Zoom. And we're like, okay. And we just had to do so much on our own. So I think at that time, we just spent so much time together in the kitchen, and we discovered very quickly that this business cannot run without both of us. And at that time, like I joked about, one of us was always crying. And it was because it was just so hard. Like, everything was hard about it. And we were doing it alone, and we didn't have another like similar business to call up and ask for help. And we were also maybe a little too proud at that point to ask for help when we, I think that's like one of those pieces of advice that we got that we maybe didn't listen to, and it was, like, hire before you think you're ready, because you're probably already ready. And we were ready, but we didn't know what we were hiring for. Like, we don't know what we're doing, right? So it was super busy. We would work our full-time jobs. We would go get all of the supplies that we needed for that night. We would head down to the local kitchen. We would work until sometimes, like I said, 2 or 3 in the morning, and then start again the next day doing the exact same thing. So it was pretty tricky out of the gate, but I think our biggest reason for always putting each other first is because that was one of our most foundational, like, ideas, I guess. We just said, we're always going to give back, we're going to support local as much as possible, and it's you and I above everything else. So if that can't be how it goes, then it's going to be a bit of a mess. So it has to be you and I above everything else. We always have to be on the same page, and we have been for almost four years.
So 2020 COVID, I mean, that changed the trajectory of the initial when we first chatted.
Yeah.
The idea was a little different than what it ended up becoming, correct?
Yeah, absolutely.
And so maybe you can comment on the influence of COVID and how it actually changed the trajectory of the business and actually the offering of your product.
So what we heard from customers in those early stages was people were looking for a way to connect, to gather, to create that connection with other people over food, but they couldn't do it in settings like this, right? We couldn't all be in a room together and share a grazing table like that. It had to be individually packaged options that were safe for one person to eat. And we were doing, you know, that first year, we started in September, and that first Christmas, I remember we were doing Christmas parties for businesses, like huge corporations, and they were ordering an individual box to go to each person on their team who would then go on Zoom, and they would have a Christmas party over Zoom.
Yeah.
And the big piece behind that is they were still able to connect and gather over a meal, but not all in the same room, right? So that was how our business started. And for probably the first year and a half, it was like largely individual options. That was huge for us. And then come post-COVID, we turned into this, we had to shift a little bit. And we always say that we're always in a state of transition in this business. We're constantly having to pivot and figure out, you know, okay, well, what are the health restrictions at this time? How do we keep up with that? And then we realized that people were really comfortable with getting together in big groups again, and people wanted to gather. And so then we were like, okay, grazing tables is the next big thing. So let's figure out a way to do this in a safe way again, but give people the opportunity to gather in large groups and share a meal.
I think the cool thing too about COVID, not cool thing about COVID, but That is not what I meant. During that time was when these boxes got delivered to people's houses. It was like a little mini gift, right? Like there was kind of an unboxing that went along with it. Because also nobody knew who we were. So they were like, I just got this thing from the Prairie Grazer, right? I have no idea what it is. And then you got to unbox it to see this beautiful box, right? It was interesting, though, because back then we did most of the deliveries. So we would show up at people's houses and then they would be like, oh, that's so great that the Prairie Grazer has a delivery service. And we were like, we are the delivery service, right? But it was pretty neat to be able to connect with people during that time. In that way, right? Like to actually show up at your door and hand you a box or whatever that looked like. But it was like little mini gifts during a time that didn't have a lot of little gifts, right?
And the whole idea of a sort of a charcuterie board in a box was not anything that Calgary had or BC had, right? Yeah. That was not even that concept. So you really pioneered that out of necessity, right? And it's one of those things where COVID just sort of accelerated it, right?
Well, and that's the one of the biggest struggles we had is there wasn't anything like us in Saskatchewan or really Western Canada, mm-hmm. aside from kind of what you had seen on the island. So we really had to kind of trailblaze what this would look like and say, how do we do this? Because even when we approached our local health inspector the first time to have this conversation, he was like, you want to do what? Like, you want to repackage certain foods into a box. Like, he just couldn't wrap his mind around what this looked like, and they couldn't even figure out how to classify us, right? Because there was nothing like that. We just knew we needed to have health approval. We knew it needed to be in a commercial kitchen, and we just kind of took it step by step.
On that note, the early days, you had mentioned that you had some sort of trials and tribulations along the way. Obviously, we all do, anyone that has a small business. But yours were actually kind of like, I would say, like, they were kind of... not basic, but it's just stuff that you hadn't really, don't even think about, right? Because you didn't have a background in sort of entrepreneurship. So maybe you can comment on what some of those early, like, enlightened moments were.
Well, I think that one of the biggest stumbling blocks for us was that we would call up some of these food companies, like big food companies, like Pineview Farms, right? And say, we would really like to partner with you. And we want to essentially take your meat products and put them in these boxes. And they were like, yeah, no, we're good, thanks. And we're like, hey, we're just these two girls. You're right, we have no business background at all, but this is what we'd like to do. And they're like, yeah, we're still good. We're good, stop calling us. We'll call you. And even for those of you that know Johannes in the city who owns Haynes Hummus, when I called him, he actually said, you know, I'm going to maybe call you back. I have to think about this because I don't honestly really know. But it was like a bit of a steep learning curve in terms of how we approached people. But once people saw what this could be, that it was really based in community, then it changed. And we always say it was like the biggest win when someone called us to say like, hey, how do I get my product into one of your artisan boxes? And we were like, we have officially made it.
Yes, you've made it.
Like, this was the day we made it, right?
So when did that point of inflection happen? When did the, I need you to be part of our, you know, grazer box, to the I want to be part of that. Like, when exactly along the timeline did that happen?
It was pretty early on. And, you know, those initial stages were really hard because we couldn't have those face-to-face conversations with businesses, right? We had to do a lot of this by email and by phone. But after we kind of partnered up with people like Pineview and Three Farmers and Pig and Pantry and things like that, word spread pretty quickly. And then people were approaching us and saying, hey, I've got this product, can it go in your boxes? And we're quite selective about who we put in our boxes. Like, they have to fit with our beliefs and our core values. And it has to be a product we like, right? That's first and foremost, it has to be something we love. And if it doesn't check those boxes, we don't do it.
And in, for example, Johannes's case, he had to repackage his as well, right? I mean, that's another complication.
So all of his product essentially comes to us in large food service containers, and that was not something that he had previously done. And I think the part that was now that we understand was there was just this lack of trust in who we are or who we were. And now, like, now that we have a brand that we trust and love and, like, it's our baby, now we get it. Back then, I was like, just give me your stuff. Like, I'm gonna do great things with it. But you're putting, like, so much trust in someone else to not screw it up, right? Like, if someone opens the box and is like, good Lord, like, Hanes hummus, great job, Johannes, right? Like, he wouldn't, yeah. So now we get it. Back then, we hadn't built that relationship with those people. And so now I think that people kind of know who we are and know that we care so much. Like, Christy and I literally see every single box that leaves the store, either a picture of it or we've had a hand in making it, which it is our baby. It is our pride and joy, right? And we want to make sure that everything that leaves is perfect. Every single time, right? So I think that trust piece was missing in the beginning, and once people started to figure out that we had the best intentions for everyone else's business in mind, then it was a little bit easier.
Perfect. What is each other's greatest strength from each other's perspective? So what is Christy's greatest strength?
Christy's really analytical, and I mean that in a good way. She's like very analytical. She has a legal background, so like she reads everything. And I read nothing. Like, we just signed a loan and I didn't read a single thing. Like, I was just like, man.
Because you know I have your back.
Yeah. Hopefully she reads it before she signs it. I shouldn't tell people that publicly. Hey, I never read anything. Right? Like, Christy is very analytical. She is like hyper focused on the things that we need to focus on. And I am not that.
Well. What is her greatest
Which
strength?
Leads into Megan's greatest strength, is that she is the dreamer. She is the one who has these crazy ideas. I mean, she was the one that approached me with the business idea in the beginning, but it didn't end there, and it's literally every day, every week, she has an idea, which is fantastic. I mean, we wouldn't be able to remain on the cutting edge of what we do and constantly pivoting and changing without those ideas.
You'd mentioned a little bit about getting some bad advice or taking advice earlier, and we talked a little bit about this. I just wanted you to elaborate a little bit on that, like in terms of, you know, what advice was it, and sort of you sort of fell into that trap, not really knowing the business world and sort of the way things need to work. And maybe you guys can elaborate a little bit on some of that.
I think one piece of like positive advice that we got was that we should hire some people. But again, the follow-up, the like hindsight is 2020, is that we should have hired them like probably 5 months sooner, right? When we were like, we had no real idea of where this was going, especially during COVID, right? So like, do you hire people and then you're like, oh, actually we don't have a business anymore, right? We had no idea. So I think that piece was really valuable to us. Something else I think that we often tell people is you got to follow your gut. Man, we made some really bad decisions and we didn't follow our gut. And some of it had to do with like big ticket items that we will never see back, right? So we made decisions because we thought it was the best decision, and we were kind of pressured into some of those decisions because we needed the thing they were offering, right? But we both sat there and thought, like, obviously this is not a good fit for us, but we went along with it because it was what we could afford, or we were on such a time crunch.
And would you be willing to share what some of those were?
Yeah, it was actually our first website, and we needed a website, but it didn't represent us, and it was clunky, and but it was what we could essentially at the time we thought we could afford.
What we thought we could afford, yeah. Yep.
And then to be able to work with a different company who saw us, like I'm a crier over like some things, not most of the time I'm like a rock, but I'm a crier over some things. But when they showed us our website, this new company, I just cried because I was like, it was rock and bloom, yeah. It was rock and bloom, and I cried because they got us. Like it was us. Like it had nothing to do with anything else. It was everything that was us and totally different than before. And if we would have just gone with our gut, then we would have made a better choice. So I think sometimes, as much as people are like, you got to make a quick decision and it's business, and it also, I think, is important for it to sit right with you. And if it doesn't, oh man, do something else, right? Instead of throwing that money up and
Lesson learned.
Lesson learned, yeah.
Absolutely. Anything else to add on that?
There were so many things where it was like, you have to have a professional in place to do this, like bookkeeping, accounting, and we absolutely support that. You 100% have to have those people in place. But again, it was finding the right fit, right?
Yep.
We made a couple decisions along the way, and it wasn't the right fit, and it cost us a lot of money, and it caused us a lot of stress.
Yep.
So I think if we would have just taken a little bit more time to find someone that saw our vision and shared in what it was that we wanted to do, even just as a bookkeeper or an accountant, right? They could still see our vision, even though they're just looking at numbers, right? I think that would have really benefited us a lot.
Yeah.
Speaking of vision, when we chatted, you said something really interesting to me, and I thought we should maybe discuss it a little bit, about being told what a vision, your vision is, and actually, do you remember that conversation?
Yeah, I think quite a few times in when we started, we were told by lots of people what our vision should be or what we should be spending our money on or what our priorities were. And that was, sometimes we took their advice because we weren't in business. So it was like, okay, that we got to do that thing because they have more experience than us. But honestly, that actually never led us to anything positive that represented who we were, which I think is so interesting in the end.
And what I find interesting is the vision we've had since day one, that hasn't changed.
No.
Like, it's evolved, it's grown to bigger than what we initially thought it would be. But what we are doing at Gather, that is the vision that we had from day one. We've never wavered from that, and now it's becoming reality 4 years later.
It's kind of crazy. Like, sometimes I like have to like give my head a bit of a shake because I'm like, man, this is what we talked about 4 years ago. Our business right now doesn't actually represent what we originally wanted, but it had to evolve because of what was going on. And now we're going back to the thing that we wanted to do 4 years ago, which is pretty crazy. So we're excited about that.
Congratulations on that.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of small business owners here. Maybe some people that are thinking about starting small businesses. Or their own business. You're not a small business now. You're moving beyond that space. What advice would you give to anyone sort of wanting to start a new adventure?
I think kind of the biggest thing for us, and something that we've been a huge proponent for, is like, just try it. Like, you never know what will happen, right? Like, we honestly thought we would make 5 boxes and then this might not ever fly, right? And we're seeing like people who have supported us from the very, very beginning, all over this room. And that's kind of the crazy thing, is we didn't really know what this was going to be, but we just like gave it a shot and put our all into it and tried to be responsible with that. And I think that part, sometimes people say play it safe, well, but also just have fun. Like, if it's something that's like sitting with you, go do it, right?
I think a big one for me is don't take no for an answer. Be very resilient. And
she says
asking.
No to me all the time, though. Like, that's the part.
That's a different conversation. But when we first started, we got no's left, right, and center. Not only from you know, local suppliers that we wanted to work with, but we were in the middle of COVID trying to start a business in the food industry.
Yep.
How many banks do you think wanted to lend to us, right? And we didn't have any money, so we had to figure it out. So we just kept asking. We kept trying to prove ourselves until we finally found someone who saw value in what we were trying to do and believed in us. So no doesn't mean no all the time, I guess.
Yep. Yeah, great advice, great advice. What leadership qualities do you feel a budding entrepreneur should learn, try to possess, try to exude?
Resilience. Mm-hmm. I think that's the biggest one, is not letting the noise get to you and trying to keep your blinders on, because there's going to be naysayers and people who don't believe in what you do. So being able to just kind of put your blinders on and be laser focused on what it is that you're trying to do is a huge quality to have.
Yeah, and I think the other thing that we've always, I guess, thought of, or what the thing that is a foundation for us, is it's always just people over profit. So sometimes, like, if we do mess up, which it happens, it doesn't matter what it costs us to fix that, because that box was important to somebody, right? Like that moment was important to somebody, and we'll fix it. And sometimes that comes at a cost, and that's okay. So, and that goes with our team and everything. It's people over profit. Although sometimes I'm like, ooh, we should close those margins a little.
Well, welcome to a few years in business, right?
Yeah. Fact, yeah.
I know that there is a final thought that you'd like to share, and I, you know, we talked a little bit about sort of what you would like to kind of say to people, and so maybe I'll let this.
So we went down a rabbit hole, and it was like one of those things. Someone sent it to me, an educator sent it to me, and I was like, hot dog, this is a lot to take on as a mom. But it's called the dream gap, and I don't know how many people are actually familiar with this, but it kind of hit me like a ton of bricks, right? So some of you are like, oh, I've heard this. So the dream gap actually has to do with young girls. And I look at my daughter, and I'm already starting to see this with her, and it actually hurts my heart in a big way. But the dream gap is essentially this idea that girls can't see themselves doing things. And the age that they start to develop this dream gap is 5. It's 5 years old. So as an educator in the city, I see this with lots of my students, and it's something that I spend a lot of time talking through, I would say, with my students. But it's definitely also something I've noticed my daughter saying as of late, who's 8. And there are so many people in this room, and I think the big message from us to you is that as business people in this community, like, help find some really positive, strong role models for those young women who want to do amazing things. Because at the age of 5, if they already start to believe that they can't be like a pilot or a chemist or an engineer or whatever, right? Like, that is just, that statistic was startling to me that it was 5. So I think our big message leaving here today is that we had a dream, and it was to fold meat. And we went with it, right? But I mean, it's bigger now. Now it's that we're running this business that we're so proud of, and we see that our daughters are engaging in that, and they have role models. So be a role model to somebody else, and like literally push those girls in the direction that they should go in, right? Like if they want to be a pilot, oh God, encourage them to be a pilot, right?
Yeah, encourage those beliefs so that we get rid of the limiting beliefs. And it's even just like stepping into leadership roles, right? Women, little girls by the age of 5 have this belief that they're not born to be leaders, right? And they can't step into these roles. And that's just because of society and the images that they're seeing around them and the people that are around them. And one thing Megan and I have always said is that we can do it all. And, you know, a lot of people have said to us at different times, when are you guys going to quit your jobs? When are you going to leave your day jobs and just do this full time? Why? Right? Like, we can do it. We are doing it every day. We've been doing it for 4 years now, and that's never been something that, at this point, is on the radar for us. So it's just that belief that they can do it all, we can do it all, and there shouldn't be any limiting beliefs around that. You should be able to just do what you want to do.
Yeah.
Well said. Hear, hear. Well, thank you very much. I hope it wasn't too grueling on you. Christy, Megan, thank you for sharing your time with us. It's been an absolute pleasure. I'm sure you all agree. A huge thank you for providing the massive grazing table back there. For everyone to enjoy. Please check out their new location at Gather Local Market on May the 4th.
Yep.
We do have a gift for each of you from Lucky Bastard,
oh,
but let's give one more round of applause for Megan and Christy.
This has been a distilled version of Chamber on Tap, a live event hosted monthly by the Greater Saskatoon Chamber of Commerce. Check out upcoming dates and speakers at saskatoonchamber.com or follow the Chamber on Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, and Instagram using the handle @thechamberyxe.
Produced at
Sound Lounge by T-Bone.